candy ass, put your damn feelings down.
Let's laugh and drink all damn show. Drunk dudes in a gun room is in the house. Get ready. Get your drinks. Let's go.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Let's get started, everybody. Here we go.
Everybody, welcome to Drunk Dudes in a Gun Room. Hey, today I have got a special guest. Malachias is going to be here. You all are going to absolutely, you know, if you've been listening to Gun Room Radio, all right, I'm kind of hooked, so, and I'm kind of biased, but his song, Baptism by Fire, is amazing. You know, I listen to it all the time. I've added him to my playlist. It's like mostly him and Shannon Book, because both of them are just amazing. So without a doubt, man, let me bring him on and introduce him. Hey, what's going on? Welcome, man. Welcome.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. I cannot complain. Looks like the weather's nice down there.
Oh, dude, it was 80-some degrees today. Sunny. It was gorgeous.
That's awesome, man. Absolutely. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
17 year Army veteran. I did 28 months deployed. I did 15 months for the surge from 2007, 2008 with the 3rd Infantry Division, came home and transitioned from a combat unit to the 3rd Infantry Division band, and then went back to Iraq for 13 months from 2009 to 2010, as an Army musician. Even though I was a medic, I was there as a musician. And then got out, and I spent 9 years in the National Guard. I spent 8 years active duty.
Okay.
And then, you know, I was on my way out. I don't know if you know this part. Like, I was on my way out of the military on my medical retirement board, and I ended up writing a book. That was the whole like concept of my book, is where the album and the music and all that came from. But my book was called A Warrior's Garden.
Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't know you wrote a book, man. If I would have known that, I would have ordered it and had it here for the show.
Oh, you're good.
I didn't know that, man. So,
it's my journey. The book is based on my journey of trying to find a holistic way to treat for PTSD.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the middle of writing one myself. It's a tough task. I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah. It's different. Yep, definitely different.
Absolutely. So, what made you decide to go in the Army? Was that the first place that you went to, or was it the family? Or?
So I was going to join. Originally, I wanted to join the Marine Corps. My dad was an Army veteran. My grandfather was an Army veteran. Like, family as far back as we could think of goes Army. But my uncle was a Marine Corps veteran. He was a tunnel rat in Vietnam. He's just a bad mamma jamma. And I really looked up to him a lot growing up. He was kind of like my role model as a kid. My dad was not a good man. And I really kind of latched onto my uncle and dropped out of high school and got a GED. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Marine recruiter, and he was like, nope.
What?
You got to have, this is the 94 and, or 93, it was a 93. And the Marine recruiter said, you got to have an actual diploma to join the Marine Corps. And so I walked across the hall to the Navy recruiter, And same thing, got to have an actual diploma. Went to the Air Force recruiter. They laughed me out of their office. Went to the Army recruiter, and the Army recruiter said, you can join, but the Army only takes so many GEDs per day, and you have to be at MEPS first thing in the morning. Like, you got to be ready to roll. And so got to MEPS and just kept getting kind of just screwed out and screwed out and screwed out. And finally, I went over to a National Guard recruiter, and the National Guard recruiter said, he was like, yeah, we can do this, man. Like, let's go take your ASVAB. And I took my ASVAB again. And he was like, yeah, you can pretty much do whatever you want. What do you want to be? And I was like, well, I don't know. What do you got? He was like, well, pretty much the best thing we've got is medics. And are you kidding me? I think it's starting to rain. yep. And, it is, it's starting to rain. So I'm going to transition, but I'm going to keep telling my story.
Okay.
Cause I am outside on my farm, but I'm going to go inside. I think I'm going to go to my music room.
Okay.
So, or my gym, probably go to my gym, but my, anyway, so yeah, I joined, ended up joining the Army National Guard as a medic.
I think we lost you. We'll see if the internet catches back up, everybody. Give him just a minute. If not, I'm sure he'll pop back in. There he is.
Hey, you there? There we are.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, so I joined. And did not, like I said, 9 years in the Guard, and then I got out of the Army and ended up doing 8 years. After I left the Guard, I ended up homeless with a wife and three kids a couple years later.
Holy crap, man.
And so we owned a family landscape company that we'd had since I was 10 years old. My dad started it from the ground up, and then ended up, he passed away in August of 04. And then when he passed away, the banks kind of come in and just ransacked everything. And so when he passed away, I ended up, just lost my job, lost my career, I lost everything. Yeah. And at the same time, like within a month or two afterwards, my landlord drops a letter off at the house while I'm working for someone else that he's evicting us because he's selling all this stuff and moving back to Greece. And so we ended up for about a year and a half, like transitioning between sleeping on people's floors and, all the stuff like that. And so I ended up active duty because I didn't have anything else. Like, it was military, it was landscaping, or it was music, and music wasn't really paying the bills. So we went active duty and spent 8 years at Fort Stewart, Georgia for the Army. So, wow. And then when I retired, when I wrote my book, my publisher was from Franklin, Tennessee, which is about 30 minutes from Nashville. And he was just like, dude, you got to come up here and check it out. There's just too many options for veterans. And so we came to Tennessee on a 4-day weekend, kind of on a whim, and just kind of God put everything in the place that we needed. I was offered a job. We got approved for a house. Like, everything we needed just kind of just fell into place. Mm-hmm. And from 2006, we were homeless. In 2016, we bought a 22-acre farm.
Wow.
And then last year, we sold 12 acres and paid off our farm.
That is awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough road, I didn't even know any of this story, but that's a tough road to get to where you got to, man. But
yeah,
wow. So you were a steward, huh?
Yeah, I was at Fort Stewart for 8 years, second brigade for four, and then or three. I was at second brigade for three, and then 5 years with the 3rd Infantry Division, man, at the division headquarters.
Okay, yeah, So I retired out of Fort Stewart, and I did 10 years at half. So real familiar.
Okay.
My family's still in Jessup. So, yeah.
Okay. I've got friends that are still in Richmond Hill.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's the, that's where the rich people live.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where all the officers are located.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. All the enlisted are in Hinesville.
Yep. That's where I was at. You are absolutely right, man. So when you got out of the military, how did the band and all that stuff come about? Or did you have a different job when you first got out?
When I got out, I got to Nashville, and we were actually in Brentwood, which is just outside of Nashville. And I was offered this job working for a guy running his company where he had a credit card processing and identity theft management that he marketed to banks.
Okay.
He hired me as his office manager to run his company and, you know, whenever he'd be on the road or whatever. Because when he hired me, it was more of like, it was the weirdest interview I've ever done in my life, which I, looking back on, I really appreciate what he did. But I spent 7 hours at his office interviewing with every department head from every part of the company. And at the end of the day, he sent me on my way. And then they basically sat down for dinner with that. Everybody, and they were all like, yeah, we can work for him. And so he brought me in and let me run his company for a year. And I went from 80% disabled to 100% disabled by VA. So that was like, when I looked at that, and I had already started my own kind of landscape company / garden company. And I looked at my wife, and I'm like, I'm making enough. And she was like, yeah, go ahead. And I put in my notice and went and did it full time. And then I blew my knee out. Mowing yards and ended up going to college using my GI Bill. And so from high school dropout with a GED, I go to a medium sized to large sized Christian university in Nashville called Lipscomb University. Got my bachelor's degree in 21 months from start to finish. I was doing like 21 credit hours, 18 credit hours, 21 credit hours. Like I was just maxing out everything for undergraduate.
Yeah.
Got my bachelor's in psychology. Graduated with honors, and from high school dropout to graduate college graduate. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And then started grad school. Mom got sick. COVID happened. Like a whole bunch of stuff snowballed. And I pretty much just stopped going to school at that point. And then took a job. And I started working. I worked in, hold on. I worked for a company called Tennessee Recovery and Monitoring, where I did GPS monitoring and alcohol and drug monitoring for the Middle Tennessee court systems.
Mm-hmm.
Did that for about a year and then transitioned over to actually work for the Williamson County DUI court and the Williamson County Veterans Court. And then my job that I have now is I actually transitioned over as a veteran service officer.
Okay.
So I work for the county. I'm a county employee as a veteran service officer working for veterans. In the county that I live in. And then, I mean, that's pretty much been it. Now it's like, but musically, like when I got here, like the intent was to try to do something musically.
Mm-hmm.
And we got here in 2014. And it took me until 2.5 years ago when I was talking to a buddy of mine, cause I got really frustrated musically, because of the Army band system. I got very, very frustrated musically. And then when I got here, it took me a while to finally reach out to somebody who's a buddy of mine, he's a Somalia veteran, Purple Heart recipient. Like he's an amazing dude. He's a great man. I said, hey man, I haven't written a song in a long time, but I really like to write a song about my book and about all the things that I do with the Warriors Garden. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we sat down and we wrote the last song on the album, which is the Warriors Garden. And we wrote that in about an hour and a half. And I want to say it was a couple of weeks after that, he was like, hey, meet me at this address. We're going to record. And so I showed up and we recorded it and I released a single. And that really is what motivated me to get back into music.
Yeah.
And then I was blessed to meet a lot of my Christian music artists that I really look up to. I got to meet them and kind of pick their brains and talk about things. And now I sat down with my guy I write with and I was just like, hey man, I want to redo this. I want to do this. I want to do that. And then I got to meet a guy whose name, a lot of people probably don't know who he is, but his name's Paul Coleman. He's a Christian artist, Dove Award winner, Grammy nominated. He was with the Newsboys, which is a real big Christian pop band. And we met and he just kind of took a liking to me and he was like, hey man, I want to play guitar with you. Let's go. And so we played a couple shows and did some stuff. And then he inspired me to really just get out there and do an album. And so I hired this guy that I work with now. I love him to death. He's my guitar player, Chris Glaring. And we sat down. He's got a studio and all that. And so I was like, let's do it. So I hired him to write with me because at the time I couldn't play guitar at all. And we wrote my album For Those That Remain. And that launched on July 4th of last year.
Okay. Wow, man. That is a story. Wow.
And that's just like the little pieces of it. So
yeah, absolutely, man. So like I said at the intro, man, my favorite song so far is Baptism by Fire. How did that come about?
So the whole purpose of the album was to tell the life story of the veteran, right?
Right.
And when you get into the sequence to where Baptized by Fire is, that's the song that's about, like, that's about the warfighter in those moments where, like, they're in combat, they're getting shot at, they're getting blown up, they're going through all those things, those emotions, all of that. And it's just, it's, you know, it's organized chaos.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It is.
And it's really, it's like, you know, it's like that Mike Tyson said, you know, everybody has a plan until you get in the ring and someone punches you in the mouth.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then everything, all planning goes out the window. And that's really the whole embodiment of that song, is like that whole plan. Like, you have a plan, you train. And then that first ID goes off and everything goes out the window.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I think that's one reason why, you know, it kind of resonated with me, because I still remember, you know, after deploying several times, so I did a total of 68 months between Bosnia, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
Wow.
And, some things still get fuzzy. You know, sometimes when I talk about things, I can't remember whether it was Iraq or Afghanistan, because I was there so many times. But I can still to this day tell you the first time I deployed to Afghanistan, my first meal, and I can vividly talk about all those details. It's everything after that that kind of gets a little bit lost because of all the rotations. But yeah, man, I remember the first time we took fire, the first time we got mortared, and it's exactly like that. You know, I remember laying on the ground and just seeing people running and thinking to myself, why is he running towards the explosion? Why is he, you know, and things were just going through my mind, and it was like slow motion, you know. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, the drill sergeant said, you're supposed to call out a direction and everybody's supposed to run when you hear the whistle. And I was thinking to myself, what damn whistle? All I heard was the explosion.
Yeah, right. And then everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, man. So, you know, and it, that rocket hit a generator. I don't know, probably about, if I had to guess, maybe 50 yards from where I was walking. And, yeah, it's exactly like that, man. It's control. It's chaos.
Oh yeah.
And you can still remember things going through your mind and everything. So, you know, when that part of that song where they were talking about trying to get your troops through and get them out, man, dude, that just hit me because, I remember the first time, you know, I told somebody to do something and they damn near got killed. And I remember the, you know, the stress and the fear that kind of came over me, you know, because I sent somebody there to do that. And, you know, you start what ifing every decision you make.
Oh, and, quick and easy. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that song really resonated with me, man. I absolutely love it.
Well, you know, and so my first deployment when I was there for the surge during that 15 month span, right. I went over as a medic and I get there and I'm on a security team and they put us on EOD escort. So I'm the medic for an EOD escort team. And we get done with that mission, lasted about 4.5-5 months, something like that. When that mission ended, they were like, hey, we're going to move you to a patrol base and we're going to assign your whole squad. We had 4 gun trucks and they go, we're going to assign your squad to a, artillery unit, 19FA out of 2nd Brigade and, Battle Kings. Whoop. And so they go, hey, we're gonna put you out there with this unit, and they're doing presence patrols. They're going door to door, villages, clearing villages, doing all these things. I'm like, okay. And we get out there, and the chain of command finds out that somebody opened their mouth, but the chain of command found out that I used to be 11 Bravo, so I was infantry. And so they were like, hey, Doc, come here. And I'm like, hey, what's up, sir? And he's like, we understand you used to be in the infantry. And I was like, yeah, I was 11 Bravo, staff sergeant in the infantry. And he was like, okay. He goes, you're going to be a squad leader. I'm like, yeah, no sir. Like, I'm here as a medic. My job is to save lives, not take those. I'm an asset, not a mall flyer. You know what I mean? That's my job. And he goes, well, we've already talked with your chain of command, because I was on loan from a different battalion. And then we've already talked with your chain of command, and we have a memorandum signed by your battalion commander.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, well then we're going to do this my way. And they actually sent us back to the FOB for 3 days. I asked for a week. They gave me 3 days. And we went back and all we did for three straight days was react to sniper fire, react to small arms fire, react to indirect fire, react to IED, how to cordon a building, you know, how to use a triangle method, how to use a cigar method, how to use a circle, how to use a square, a diamond, you know what I mean? Like different methods for occupying homes and villages and all these things.
Right.
And then, you know, how to set up a leader's recon, how to properly use your op orders, you know, all those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
In route rally points, you know what I mean? Like the platoon leader goes to the front, platoon sergeant goes to the back. They're separated by the whole formation because you don't want them too close together, because if they both get hit because they're both rubbernecking up front, you know what I mean? Like if the platoon leader's job is to look where you're going, the platoon sergeant is where we've been, you know?
Yep.
And the medic is supposed to be in the hip pocket of the platoon sergeant, and we just get it done. So that was my job, like for most of that deployment, was, you know, I was leading teams, kicking into doors and doing all that stuff. And then towards the last 3 months of the deployment, my first sergeant pulled me off the line and put me back in a hospital. And so I did that. That's really, and that's where my PTSD started exhibiting itself, because my brain finally had a moment to slow down.
Yeah.
And I stopped sleeping. I'd go 3-4 days, no sleep. And then all of a sudden I'd be out for a day.
Yeah.
And it got to a point in the last couple months where my first sergeant was like, hey, how often are you sleeping? I'm like, every third to fourth day, top. And he was like, you just go do your thing. I'm going to take you out of a full rotation. You just go do you go do whatever job is available. He goes, and when you're ready to sleep, just let me know. So I just go work 2-4 days. You know what I mean? And then I go, hey, top, I'm out. And I go sleep for 24 hours and just do it again and again and again the rest of the deployment.
Yeah.
And then came home but really, I mean, baptized by fire was really that. It was inspired by that whole deployment where it was like, it was nonstop organized chaos.
Yeah.
Everywhere we went, everything we did, no matter what it was.
Yeah, man. Man, that song hit deep with me. And, you know, I'm not gonna lie. Like I said, I'm kind of biased. You know, I get to see the polls and the top 20 and all that stuff, but I ain't gonna lie. You know, I kind of look to see where that song is all the time in our top 20 chart, you know,
and, right.
It's just an amazing song. And, I think that's one of the things that especially now hearing that story, that a lot of people just don't understand. And we really changed our tactics when it came to the later stages of that war. You know, when we first started like Afghanistan, it was a special ops war, you know, and then it went on longer and longer. And then it became infantry, you know, getting involved, you know, large scale infantry. And then, you know, we started losing people to all these convoys and everything else. And then, you know, I'd love to punch the damn dude in the face that thought this up. But then, you know, then they started using your combat support MOSs to be, you know, gun truckers and everything
and that's
else.
What we did.
Yeah. And you don't get that training, you know.
Well, the squad that I worked with, we had a platoon. It was called Top Flight. 8 months out from deployment, all we did was infantry ops, and it was cooks, medics, supply, mechanics, admin, MI. But it was, they took us and put us in these jobs. But that's at that point, from the day they made the platoon up for the year, that's all we did. We did infantry operations, react to sniper fire, react to IED, how to do a cordon, all these things. So unlike most of them, because most of them was like, hey, we're in Iraq or we're in Afghanistan. Hey, everybody's an infantryman. You know what I mean? We were blessed that our battalion decided we're going to make our own security platoon, and we're going to train. You're going to work as if that's your MOS. And so I had a bunch of guys that, like, that's, you know, cooks. I mean, all that. And it's, and we went over there with the mindset of we're infantry.
Wow, man. Hey, Josh,
but that's
Josh,
rare.
Josh Padilla, I'm sorry to hear that, man. Josh Padilla put in the comments that he lost a battle buddy to suicide today, man.
Brother, I am so sorry, man. I really am. I'm the state coordinator for the state of Tennessee for the Spartan Pledge, which is a suicide prevention modality that was written by a great man named Boone Cutler. I wear six bracelets, KIA bracelets. which I've had whittled down to two. I put a bunch of names on two different bracelets now, but I have six friends I lost in combat. My first 12 months out of the military, I lost double that to suicide. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
So I get that. That sucks.
And, you know, we always, I don't know, at least I did, you know, especially this year, I look towards, you know, because last year was a brutal year for suicides. And I looked, I was hoping that maybe this year would be better. And you know, our first, I think by our third podcast, man, we were already back in it, you know, talking about, hey, we got to do better. Because, you know, just in our little circle of people, you know, we had, there was three people that took their lives, you know, and that was in the first 2 months of 2003, you know, and we got a small little circle. So to have that many people in a small group like that, you know, that's not a good sign, man. And Josh, you know, my heart goes out to Sergeant Severa's family and to you, brother. But, you know, I think, you know, so like our unit, we took and we started about talking about it about 6 months out is when we started training for our gun trucks and everything else. And, but they didn't really start training solidly until about 4 months out because, you know, a lot of them were mechanics. A lot of them were mechanics and we were using them to get the equipment ready to go in the first place, you know? So I'm really surprised we didn't lose more to what was going on over there with the amount of convoys we did. You know, God was looking out for us and you know, our last deployment, we did pretty good. We encountered some IEDs, but you know, everybody made it back home. So, but, I think there's a lot of people out there that don't understand, you know, that the Army and the military in general, you know, especially the Fort Stewart train, as I call it, you know, because once that train starts going, man, it don't ever stop. You know,
it's a fast train to Iraq, man.
It is, man. You are constantly deploying. And I think I've always said this, you know, I think there should be a law, man, or a regulation that says, you know, hey, after X number of deployments, your ass is training people. You're not deploying them.
Well, and that's the other thing is like, if you remember like Vietnam and, you know, so before our generation, right?
Yeah.
Our Vietnam guys, our Korean War guys, all this, you went over and you fought the war until the war was over or until your enlistment was done. You know what I mean? Like once you deployed, you were there. You didn't come home. Right.
Yeah.
You know, those guys, you know, went over in 42, they went over to West, you know, the European theater in 42. They came home in 45 when the war was over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We went over, did our time, came home for a year, which I think to me, it was almost worse.
It was.
You know, and you were, so you were Stuart, you know, you were third ID, is we're on our way home from Iraq or Afghanistan. And the chain of command goes, hey, y'all, just so you know, we're coming back to Iraq or Afghanistan on this date. Like we knew when we were coming back on the way home, you know? And then my last deployment in, you know, 2009 to 10, fourth ID was our battle space transfer. Like when we were coming home, fourth ID was supposed to come in and take over. Fourth ID wasn't ready to show up. And so they got a 30-day extension and we found out the day we were getting on planes, you know, which, you know, there's a million of those stories for our guys, but it's like, we're like, oh crap. You know, like we'd already done customs. We'd already done everything. But it was like the mission, the op tempo was so quick, so fast all the time, you know, and I could just imagine like, you know, when I was in a line unit, you know what I mean? I could imagine what that would have been like being in like, you know, a Ranger battalion or having been in an SF unit where you hit the ground and the day you get there, you're on mission.
Yeah, man. I did 10 years in special ops when I was at HAP.
So, you know, like
from 2000 to 2002.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's like, yeah, but you only did 3 months at a time.
Well, yeah, but you're doing 8 months worth of deployments or in missions in 3 months.
Yeah. And what they don't understand is I'm doing 3 months in Iraq. And then I come back to the States, I'm doing 3 months in the States, and then I'm going 3 months to Afghanistan, and then I'm going to Colombia, and then I'm going to the Philippines. I mean, we were in five different theaters, counting the United States, as a battalion.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't understand that tempo. It weighs on you.
Oh, it does.
And, you know, and in that life, you know, it's harder on the families, too, because they won't even tell you, you know, when they're coming back, when, you know, where they're going, how long they're going to be gone, you know, and, you know, the families don't find out until you're about 8 hours out from touching ground. That's when they start notifying families that, that, you know, your loved one will be home tonight. And, I mean, I understand why they do it. It's just, but it is hard, man.
It is. You know? It's rough.
And
but it's, just, you know, it's the life we chose too, man.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I wouldn't change a thing. And I know it doesn't make any sense. You know, we sit here and talk about how hard it was and how the thing.
Oh, do it again in a heartbeat.
But, and everybody says that. And it's not the war there. That's the hard part. It's the adjusting to here is the hard part. And that's what people don't understand.
It's so intense when you're there all the time, the cortisol levels, your adrenaline is just pumping nonstop. You're on mission. You're doing your thing. But life is so simple because it's yes, no, you know, it's life or death. It's yes or no, you know, it's, and then you come home and there's so many variables.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, it's combat is so simple.
You know, we was talking about this yesterday in the podcast with Barbara Sim and
I love her. She's amazing.
She is, man. And you know, the things that she's doing, the way she's living right now. Oh my God. I tell her all the time. I said, man, I worry about you all the time. Cause just as a truck driver, I know what it's like out there on the roads. And man, she's van lifing it. But you know, she's on that path that she should be on. And like I told her,
she's on self-discovery, man.
Yeah. And she's becoming artistic and finding herself. And I think that's important. So, you know, my hat's off to her, but like I was telling her, you know, those first 2 years of transition, man, those are the most dangerous times, you know? And a lot of people, you know, we just recently started talking about it, but you know, that's when I was going downhill. You know, when I got out, I didn't know I had PTSD. I was planning suicide. I was pushing my family away. You know, I was looking to try to figure out the bills and how much money my family was going to need. And all that was in my plan. And, you know, what saved me was two things. And one being I did the worst thing possible as a father that I still regret. And that's the main reason why I'm writing my book is to kind of explain some things to my kids that I just don't talk about. And, you know, my wife kind of put two and two together what was happening with me. And, we had a hurricane in Georgia, and man, there were so many people in my house. I mean, it was me, my wife, my kids, my son's girlfriend, her sister, her mom, and we'd been in there for, you know, going on 2 days, and I couldn't take it no more.
You're ready to start swinging on everybody.
I was, man, and I went for a walk. You know, there was still curfews. We weren't allowed to be out and everything yet because, you know, the area was still damaged and all that stuff. The lines are still down. And I came back and I could just feel that fire in me just wanting to fight. And my son said something and I went off, you know, and I threw my son out of my house right after a hurricane, you know. And it's things like that, you know, and that to that day. When I about hit him and my wife had to get between us to that day, that was when I, you know, I realized I did need help. It wasn't everybody else that was fucked up. It was me.
Right.
And, you know, things got better from that day, you know, but that was probably the worst day of my life. You know, that was probably when I was at the worst. And I know there's probably worse stories out there, but you know, that's my story. And,
right.
I think those first 2 years, you know, because that was about my first 2 years, is the hardest.
Yeah, the first 12 months is the most critical when it comes to creating the coping mechanism for, you know, dealing with suicide ideation.
Yeah.
Right. The first 12 months. It's the second 12 months of actually being willing to transition from the military mindset into the veteran mindset. Because a lot of veterans, what they end up doing is like, I'm not going to assimilate, right?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to assimilate. In the sense of losing your identity, right? You're supposed to integrate into your community as a veteran, right? Because here's the deal, and I catch flack on this. No matter what you do after you serve in the military, you will never be a civilian again. You're not in civilian life.
Yeah.
You're a veteran in the civilian community.
Yep.
Okay? And that's not that that's a bad thing. It's the fact by definition, because you served, you're never going to be a civilian again. Right. You have different life experiences. You have different life things, right?
Yep.
So the goal at that point is to take all those skills that we have and integrate ourselves into our community to where we can improve our foxhole, you know, our neighborhoods, our counties, our cities. But it takes that first, like I said, that first year is critical for developing, because they don't teach you the coping mechanisms on active duty when you go to leave about mm-hmm. how to deal with suicidal ideation. They don't.
Right.
And yep. once you've been to war and you've pulled that trigger, whether you've killed someone or not, once you've been in a firefight, you've pulled the trigger, because now the intent's there, right?
Yep.
It's you or me. Once that flip has been switched, or that switch has been flipped, right? At that point, it's you can't turn it back off. You have to learn when not to touch it.
Yeah.
And that's what we don't really get into a lot of. And when when I left Stewart in 14, you know, I went through the ACAP program and it was an absolute joke.
Oh yeah, I agree.
The instructors didn't want to be there. They would come in half asleep, do their thing, get you in, get you out, check the block, send you on your way. And I really had no clue what I was doing when I left. Luckily, my first stint of 9 years was in the Guard, so I already had that military and civilian and veteran mindset, right? Where it was right. like I can integrate, because I was already doing it when I was in the National Guard. So my transition from active duty was a little easier, but I learned that there's two key elements to all of it, right? For all of the transition, that whole time period, is you got to have two mentors. You need a civilian mentor who can plug you into the community where you're going to be, right? I came to a brand new area. I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
But if I'd have gone home, I would have reached out to somebody, some of the guys I grew up with that, you know, were being successful in the civilian side, whatever. But you need that one civilian mentor that can help you transition, that can teach you how to talk.
Right.
To people that have never served, because that's a whole nother animal, right? And then you need a veteran mentor, someone who has successfully gone from the military to the veteran community, right? And someone that you can connect with that can help pull you along, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I think my transition was so successful, was I had this amazing civilian mentor that was introducing me to other people, that was integrating me into community and all those things. And then my buddy Boone, who did it from a distance, right? But he mentored me as a veteran leaving the military. Every Saturday I would call him and we would talk about what I was going through, what my transition was like, all those things. But it's really reaching back, grabbing that guy and pulling him with, you know, guy or gal.
Yeah. And I, you know, I never thought about it like that with the civilian mentor, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's actually in my book.
Is absolutely, man. So where all have you been performing at lately?
So I play a lot in Murfreesboro at a club called Heroes Den, or that I think they just actually sold that Single Tree Barbecue now. And then we've got a local club here in Columbia, Tennessee, where I'm at, where we do an open mic night for veterans, the second Tuesday of every month. I played a show earlier this month, I can't remember, in Bowling Green, Kentucky. I mean, I played in career wise, you know, I've been in and out of music for 30 years, but I performed in, Ireland, Germany, China, Kuwait, Iraq, Dubai.
Okay. Now we can't just skip by China. You played in China.
So, and that was just kind of a makeshift, it was a hip pocket show. I was over there on a tour for my book and for everything else that I was doing, where the Chinese government actually brought me over. This is 2016. Brought me over to speak about using agriculture as a way to mitigate suicide. And so while I was there, they found out that I was a musician. And on my last night there, they pulled up give us the top six or seven songs that you know. And so I just picked a bunch of covers, and they went and found backing tracks for me. And then I did a little makeshift show while I was in China, and performed for a bunch of people. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, man, that is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
but I spent a week in Chengdu, China. It was really.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact of being asked by the Chinese government to come over and teach that. Holy crap!
Yeah, and you know, yeah, they gave me I had a personal interpreter. She was phenomenal. I love her to pieces. We're still very close. She's like another daughter to me. But yeah, I had my own private interpreter. And then the crazy thing was, when I was there, I started meeting all these guys that were military veterans, you know, Chinese Army veterans, yeah. But they were all combat vets. And I'm like, where the hell are you fighting? Like, yeah, you're, how are you? Like, Mali, they're fighting in Mali against radical Islam.
No kidding.
From 2009 on. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. So I wrote a whole nother book. I wrote the whole second book when I came home from that trip. It's only on Kindle. You can't buy it on, it's not a physical copy. It's only on Kindle. But it's called A Warrior's Garden, The Chinese Way. We actually talk about the differences between our version, our VA, and their version of the VA, right? Because they don't have a VA.
Yeah.
They have a veteran ID card. And when they go to a hospital or to a doctor, they just pull the ID card up and show it, and they get bumped to the front of every line.
That is awesome.
I asked them about, you know, how do you guys deal with, like, veterans that are homeless? And they're like, what do you mean? We don't have homeless veterans. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, if we find, if the police come up and they ask for your papers, and they see your papers that you're a veteran, they'll take you to the closest village and find the vacant house, and they put you in the house, and they go, this is now your house. And you have to fix it up and just live there. And then they go, hey, we're also going to hire you, and it's your job to clean the neighborhood. So your job is just to go pick up trash and pick up litter and all that crap. So now you're off the street, you got your health care, and then you have a job.
Man.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, why are we not doing it this way? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. There's that one, I don't know if it's still that way, but there was a moment in Detroit, Michigan, where there were enough vacant and abandoned houses they could home almost every veteran, every homeless veteran in the United States.
Wow.
Just in Detroit.
Yeah.
There's enough, you know what I mean? Because at any given time, there's 35,000 homeless veterans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's a large amount of them in California and Florida, which makes sense, you know, weather-wise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. And you don't hear anything about it. And that's, you know, I don't want to get on that soapbox, but yeah, it's.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, it's one of those things that just riled me up because it feels like what they said. That's the way we should be responding. What do you mean? We don't have homeless veterans, you know, but that's not it. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, there's homeless veterans. So what's for dinner? You know?
Yep.
And that's just kind of the way it gets passed on. And it's disgusting, man.
Yeah.
You know, and just recently the veterans who, you know, the VA is paying for extended stay hotels for
in New York.
And
20 of them got kicked out on the street so they could put illegal immigrants into the hotel. And you can call it undocumented. I don't care what you call it, man. They're here and they didn't come in the country the right way. And so they kicked out veterans who served their country onto the street so they could put them in a hotel.
Yeah.
That's not right.
I mean, I'll be honest. And yeah, I'm biased or whatever, and people can disagree. And that's why, you know, I love my podcast because I get to say whatever I feel. And I don't care if you are an American citizen. You know, if I have to choose between a homeless American citizen and a homeless veteran, you know, what do you do for your country? Now, if you could tell me you were a cop or, you know, a doctor, a fireman, you were given back to society, that's a whole different question. But if you tell me, oh, I was a lawyer, okay, well,
yeah,
enjoy your legal street because,
yeah,
you know, I'm one of those guys, man. I'm pro veteran and if you're not doing something for your country, you know. And that's exactly how I feel about, you know, when we argue about politics. You know, I consider myself to be politically homeless. I vote for the person that I think is going to do the best for our country and our veterans. You know, my personal views and my personal morals, my, you know, Second Amendment rights and all that stuff, I put that aside. You know, the first thing that comes, you know, the most important thing is our economy and our veterans and our military. And that's how I base my votes, you know. And I think that's, you know, you got to take care of those things first. And after that, the wants can come. You know, that's what my parents always said. You know, we got to pay the bills and we can figure out the wants later, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's important, man. So this album that you got out, you got the song Grind, man.
Well, that's a new single, so.
Oh, so that wasn't part of the original album then?
No. Well, the crazy thing is, like, so my brother Josh and I, we served together at Fort Stewart. And he was coming in on my way out kind of thing. But I was in a med board. I started a med board right after he got there. And he was a former infantryman, had a CIB from Afghanistan, and then came to Fort Stewart as an army musician. And we sat down and he's like, "Hey, I want you to hear this." Like, we got to talking, like, we had all the same, like, we love the same music and all that. And he goes, "Tell me what you think about this." And he played this track for me, and it was just the backing track. And I was just like, "Hey, you got any lyrics to that?" And he was like, "No." I'm like, "Will you email it to me and let me try to put something to it?" He's like, "Yeah." And he sent it to me, and I took it home, and, you know, I think it was a couple of days, and I wrote the lyrics to it. And then I just kind of did a makeshift kind of little recording of my vocals and sent them to him, and he created a single out of it. Right. And this is back in 2012. Uh-huh. This last year he was at SLC at Fort Knox. He's now a career counselor for the Army. He's still on active duty. And I'm praying for him. I'm hoping he's going to make E7 very, very soon. And so he calls me, he's like, "Hey, I'm going to be at Fort Knox for a month. And then I'm going to come down to where you're at, and we're going to go, I want to play some shows. I want to do some stuff." I'm like, "Well, how about we go to the studio and finally record Grind properly?" And he's like, let's do it. And so he got here. That day was insane. Cause the day he got here, like, he came to the house, we unload all this stuff, cause he was going to stay with us for the night. We jump in the truck, we go to breakfast, and then we go to the studio and we record Grind. And then we do a quick 30-minute rehearsal of a set list for the night. And then we drive over to this local club called the Tilted Mule, which is owned by an Air Force veteran. And we play a show at the Tilted Mule. And then we get done with that. We play an hour set. And then we jump into my truck and we drive to Murfreesboro an hour away. And we play another hour set. And we do a Spartan Pledge. And I talk about suicide prevention and all that. And then we came home. And then I went back to the studio 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later. And went and did the official vocals for it. And my producer got done with it and he sent it to us and we fell in love with it. And Josh uploaded it to his first guy. He uploaded it through his account for the very first time. It's his very first release. And just added me as a collaborator with it. But he wrote the music and I wrote the lyrics and then we did it together. And then, like, honestly, the crazy part is, like, people are telling me, the people that I've known for a very long time are coming out of the woodwork telling me, "Dude, this is the greatest your voice has ever sounded."
Wow.
And musically, like, it's just, it's so right down the pipe, right? It's mm-hmm. And I wrote this, that song was, like, to me, the lyrically, that song was about, that was me refinding my faith after I came home.
Wow.
You know, that's what the whole purpose of that song was, just me refinding who I was as a man of God.
Yeah, man, that is awesome, man. So, one thing I want to hit before we get into that amazing guitar that we seen earlier. You said you play one of those bars you play in Murfreesboro. Isn't that part of where the Stop 22 tour plays?
I'm a Stop 22 artist. Steven Cochran and I have known each other since, I want to say, we met on Facebook in 2010 or 2011. And we've been friends ever since. And then when I moved here, I didn't realize this is where he was. Mm-hmm. And then we got to talking and realized that we were in the same area. And then when I cut my album, he was like, "Hey man, come on up." And I the first time I went out, and he's really the reason I can play guitar is because he pushed me, him and my wife, like, they both pushed me, but he pushed me where he was like, "I'm not going to let you perform with backing tracks." He let me do it one time. And then he goes, "You're not going to do it again. Like, you're going to have to learn to play guitar, or you're going to have to hire guitar players full time." He was like, "Cause I'm not going to let you do that again." And I was like, "Son of a," you know what I mean? And so, you know, I already had a couple of guitars. I had, you know, electric and acoustic in the house. And then December 27th of last year, 2022, I picked up a guitar. Now, mind you, I've tried to learn to play. I've had teachers, all this throughout, you know, 20 years. None of it's ever worked. I've never been able to play a song. I know chords, right? But I can never play anything. I could never play anything. Well, my producer that I worked with on the album, Chris Glaring, I reached out to him and was talking to him about it. He's like, "Hold on, I'm going to send you a couple little videos." And he sent me these two little minute and a half, 2 minute long videos about strumming and his concept of strumming. And when I watched them, it was like the freaking floodgates opened. Everything made sense.
Wow.
So from December 27th to now, so we're talking, you know, going on about the fifth month, right? I went from not being able to do anything to I can play three songs off my album and a couple covers.
That is awesome, man.
And not just play them, but play them and sing them.
Wow. What songs are they?
So I can play Legacy, which is the leadoff track on the album. I can play Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison. I can play Wall of Size, which is the middle track off the album. Mm-hmm. I can play Knock on Heaven's Door by Bob Dylan, because I don't like the Guns N' Roses version. And then I can play A Warrior's Garden off of the album. Okay. And then I just recently learned a couple other ones, but they were it's songs for my wife to sing, so it's not something I'm going to play. But I learned a couple songs for her. So
that's awesome, man. Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, can we hear Legacy?
Yeah, let's see if I can spin her up, man. I have not practiced today, so that's your only disclaimer. And I will do what I'll do what I can to not suck. Let me double check my stuff real quick.
Man, that is I still say that is a badass guitar. I love it.
So the crazy thing, it's a Dave Mustaine signature model made by Dean. Dave Mustaine, of course, from Megadeth. And I found it luckily, you know, I was just kind of just goofing around and I was looking around on Facebook, or not on Facebook, but on the interwebs. And I was looking around trying to find I wanted to find an American flag type guitar, you know, or guitar. Mm-hmm. And I found this one. I was like, oh my gosh, I have, so I sent the link to my wife and was like, hey, I want this guitar. Not right now, but I'm going to want this guitar. And I went to bed and she bought it.
That is awesome, man.
And my wife, you know, God love her. She's amazing. And she's put up with so much. We've been married 21 years this July. And she's put up with so much stuff for me. But she, when she bought it, she found a used one. And she got it for like $350 plus taxes and shipping and whatnot.
Wow.
You know, brand new. It's a $900 guitar. It's like $899.
Yeah.
And so the guitar gets here and it's broken.
Oh, man.
And so I contacted the store she bought it from up in Pennsylvania online. And I'm going to give them a shout out. Empire Music in Pennsylvania. If you have not, empiremusiconline.com is their website. They went above and beyond. They have no idea who I am, right? And I reached out and said, hey, the guitar was broken when I got it. And I'd really like to get a refund because I got to find this guitar. And they're like, well, what do you mean you got to find this guitar? And I was like, well, I'm a veteran. You know, the guitar with the flag on everything. Like, it's like everything I do musically right now is based on telling the life story of the veteran and all that. And he goes, well, what if I can find you a new one? And I'm like, yeah, let's talk about it. And so he goes, I'll call you back in an hour. And he called me back in an hour. And he goes, I got you. And he goes, go ahead and ship it. I'm gonna email you the label. He goes, as soon as that label triggers to me that it's on the way, I'm going to send you the other one. So when the other one got here, it was brand new.
Wow.
And he never asked for another gun.
Wow. That is awesome,
so,
man.
Yeah. So empiremusiconline.com. So Legacy, so this is the very first song on the album. So the album, if you get it, the album is called For Those That Remain. And if you decide to buy it or download it or go to Spotify and listen or whatever, the album in order from first song to last song tells the story of the life of the veteran. So Legacy being the leadoff track, this is the song that, you know, when that young man or young woman, like they're sitting at home and they have this desire to join the military and fulfill their kind of their footprint and their family legacy. So that's what this song is about.
With all of his friends, all the time on his mind. Already knows what he wants to be. Wants to rule the world and serve his country. It's all the time on his mind. When will it be his time? It's good to hold the line. This is very long. He can't see it in the future. He knew it so long ago. That's baby's destiny. New footprints on his journey. This is his legacy. all the roadblocks, jumping through all the hoops. That was time, I was mine. Summertime in Eastern 18, Cruz coming over to meet his family. It's summertime, I was mine. When will it be his time? It's good to hold the line. It's been buried in his bones. He can't see it in his future. He knew it so long ago. Let's face his destiny, leaving footprints on his journey. This is his legacy.
Awesome, dude.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Dude, that is awesome. I'm going to tell you, man, I am excited to see what you do because and I am kind of, you know, like I said, even though I am biased, but, you know, out of your music, you know, Legacy seems to be the one that gets the most votes. So that is a big hit with a lot of people. You know, I'm still a baptism by fire.
Well, like I think the beauty of Legacy is because it touches all branches. It touches all of the, because not everybody deployed, right? Like, so not all of us had the opportunity to go down range and do our thing, right? But Legacy is about that. I'm going to join. I'm going to do it. I'm going to be a part of it. You know what I mean? Like, and that thing is, like, the way I look at it, unlike, you know, Vietnam and stuff like that, our generation is every single one of us that joined because we wanted to. We joined because we knew that there was a chance we were going to war. You know what I mean? And so those guys didn't really, 90% of those guys didn't have a choice. It was like, you're going to war, you're going to jail. You know, we did it because we 100% chose to do it.
Yep. You are absolutely right. And, you know, that's the thing about, you know, the veterans after, you know, 9/11. You know, we enlisted with the thought that we could go to war. They enlisted knowing they are going to war.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, my hat's off, and I've said it in multiple episodes, you know, my hat's off to anybody that signed up. And it doesn't matter whether you did deploy, didn't deploy. You signed up knowing the odds were in your favor that you're going.
You put on the uniform knowing that there was a chance you were going to go.
Yep. So, absolutely, man. Well, brother, I appreciate you coming on, man. Where I know you got a website. What's the link to the website?
Oh, so we got a couple. For the music, it's malachiasmusic.com. So it's MALACHIAS music.com. You can download the album directly from there. It's kind of neat where you go in, you buy it, and then you put in your email, and when you make your transaction, as soon as the transaction clicks, it sends you the MP3s. So you can buy it that way. It's on iTunes, Apple. It's on every one of the streaming platforms and digital download sites. It's on all the things, Spotify, Pandora. I mean, everywhere, YouTube, all of it. And then my book and my nonprofit and everything else that I do is on www.awarriorsgarden.com.
Okay. I will make sure that I include those links in the audio version when I get it uploaded.
All right.
And, you know, I'm going to throw my little plug out there too. You can also hear him on Gunroom Radio as well. So,
oh yeah. Absolutely. I believe we made the chart. I believe we're charting every week right now. So
you are, we'll, you are. Yep,
take
you
it. Are.
Yep. As a matter of fact, last week, I believe you had two songs in the top 10.
In the top 10?
Yeah.
I'll take it. 100% I'll take it.
Yep. I believe, if I remember right, you had one that was 9 and one that was 6. I'd have to relook to make sure. But
yeah. All right.
And if I'm not mistaken, it was Legacy and Baptism by Fire.
Yeah. It was those two. But then I think, because I was up there in like first and second position for a little while with Baptized by Fire. But then all of a sudden, the fan base, man, like Barbara Sim, like her fan base just came out of nowhere. And just, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Scotty thought he was going to walk away with it. And all of a sudden, last day, he gets passed.
Yep.
Well, brother, I tell you what, man, this was a lot of fun, brother. I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, man. Like, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it, dude. And I share everything I see of yours on Facebook. So, you know, make sure any concerts or any gigs or any events, even if it's in your nonprofit, you know, it don't matter. You know, make sure it's in your Facebook, and I will make sure I get it shared.
You got it, man.
All right, brother. You take care, man. Be safe. Thanks for playing as well, brother. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.